1,
2,
3,
4,
5,
6,
7,
8,
9,
10,
11,
12,
13. I'm like, how long do we do this?
No, that's plenty.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. Oh, we ended on 13. That can't be good.
That's bad luck. Well, let's see. Did you were the last one you said that? Yeah, because you were you were odds. Okay, 14.
Boom. There we go. It's like a hotel. Better. With the 13th floor.
Well, then we would have just, skipped 13 altogether.
Oh, true, true, true. Okay.
Okay.
How do we start this?
I usually start it. I say. Hello, and welcome to A Bit Much. My name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan. And on A Bit Much, we watch a few episodes of the wonderful TV show, The 100, and then we get together and we talk about it, and you listen to us, and a great time is had by all.
Yep, that is just a great summary of the whole process. Today, we're starting in on season 5.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Are you ready to jump in?
I am. Lay those summaries on me.
Okay. Season 5, episode 1 was called Eden. Over a month after Prime Fire, Clark ventures to Polis to try reuniting with the people in the bunker, but finds it covered in rubble. She attempts to survive on her own in the barren landscape and is on the brink of death when she discovers a lush valley, which apparently avoided the worst of the death wave. She runs into a young Nightblood girl who is initially hostile, but they eventually come to good terms. 6 years later, Clark and the Nightblood Maddie live peacefully in the Green Valley until a prison transport ship lands and Clark resorts to violence to protect herself and Maddie. Meanwhile, in space, everyone is living well except Murphy, who is isolated after a schism with the rest of the group. They see the transport ship head for Earth and decide to try docking at the orbiting ship in the hopes that it can help them return to the surface. Season 5, Episode 2 is called Red Queen. In the bunker, Octavia struggles to lead the still-divided and discontent population in the wake of Prime Fire. Kane and Abby discover that the bunker entrance cannot open because it is blocked by rubble. Furthermore, Kara, who runs the hydroponic farm, announces it won't support the population for more than 5 years. Octavia increases rationing, but Kara leads a takeover that locks the doors to the cafeteria and farm while Sky Crew is eating, planning on keeping the food for themselves and letting everyone else starve. Octavia enlists Jaha to open the doors, but he insists she must prevent the angry grounders from slaughtering innocent Sky Crew. Octavia announces that everyone is either part of One Crew or the enemy of One Crew, and regains control after killing a few detractors. The door is opened, and only the Sky Crew who were guilty are captured. Octavia proclaims that the punishment for any crime against One Crew is death, but the accused will have the option to fight for their freedom gladiator style. 6 years later, Octavia continues to reign over this blood sport, and Kane enters the ring as a combatant.
Excellent summaries.
Thank you. Go ahead and give us the other one.
Sure. Episode 503, Sleeping Game. Clark and Maddie face off against the prisoners for control of the valley. When the prisoners start to close in, Clark hides Maddie and is quickly captured. She refuses to speak until she hears over their radios that they've found Maddie. In exchange for letting her go, Clark agrees to tell them everything. Meanwhile, in space, Bellamy and company make it onto the prisoners' ship, called the Allegis 4, to gather hydrazine fuel in order to get their pod back to the ground. They find the fuel, along with nearly 300 dangerous criminals in cryosleep. They key into the transmission from the prisoners' radios on the ground and figure out that they're hunting one of their own. They decide to make their way to the ground to help, using the sleeping prisoners as leverage against the prisoners on the ground in order to get them to stand down. Raven stays behind to pull the trigger should she have to. Bellamy only agrees to leave her when she lies and tells him that there's an escape pod she can use to reach the ground. Murphy, believing this lie, stays behind to keep Raven company, but soon regrets his decision when he learns of Raven's deception. Bellamy, Monty, Harper, Echo, and Amori make it safely to the ground, only to be intercepted by a contingent of prisoners. Thinking Clark lied to them when she said she and Maddie were the only ones, the prisoners' leader tortures Clark and orders her men to kill Bellamy and company. Maddie shows up and saves Bellamy and the others, who are then free to go help Clark by threatening to kill the 300 prisoners on Allegis if they don't let her go.
Nice.
Cliffhanger. Cue cliffhanger.
I feel like a problem that I ran into, and I think from your summary I can tell you also ran into, is that we don't have good names for groups of people anymore. Because it's like, we have, you know, before it was like, oh, we got Sky Crew, and then we got, like, the Grounders, and you can break those up a little bit based on, like, their clan and whatever. And now we have, like, well, there's the six people who went to space. We don't have a name for them. Like, some of them are from the 100. One of them is Echo. One of them is Amori. So we don't have a good group for, like, name for them. I guess now, by the end of the second episode, now we have, like, one crew can be the name for the people in the bunker. But, like, before that, it was hard to categorize those people too. Because that was also in my notes. It's like, I was just like, the space people did this.
Right? Where it's like, yeah, it's hard because it used to just be like, you know, Arcadians or Sky right. Crew or, you know. But,
or like yeah. The 100 or whatever.
So I'm just like, yeah. Maybe it's Bellamy's crew.
Yeah.
Clark's child and Bellamy's crew.
Yeah. So do you have anything in particular you want to start off with?
The first thing that comes to mind is that Clark could have tried way harder to get the rubble off.
So I feel like that speaks to maybe to this larger thing going on in that first episode, which, I mean, like, I think that first episode, the season premiere, was, like, really good. Like, mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. I liked, you know, seeing Clark on her own in this, like, you know, post-apocalyptic, like, landscape and, you know, the ways that she was trying to survive. And I thought that was interesting. But it's like, I don't know enough about, you know, nuclear death waves to know, like, what is or isn't realistic. But yeah, so like the whole tower has kind of collapsed. The giant tower in the middle of Polis has collapsed. But she still is able to like reach the hatch, right? And first of all, I'm like, I thought that the whole point is like they can't open the hatch for 5 years. So like, what is she planning on doing? Like, can she get in there? Like, if they're suited up, can they let her in there? Like, I don't know, whatever. That's problem number one.
Well, so my point is, right, she gets to, yeah, that's a whole other thing. Can they actually open the hatch? Which, yeah. You know, I guess, because they, like, suited up and they were going to in the next episode. So I guess they could. That feels like a pothole. But when she, you know, gives up, I feel like it wasn't the whole Tower of Rubble. It was just,
no,
like.
No, it wasn't, yeah.
It didn't seem, like, they could have, maybe they didn't have the CGI for it or whatever. But in my head, I was like, listen, she's got nothing but time, right? Well, I guess, right, no, she does have to find resources, but she can find resources and come back.
That's my thought, is like, okay, if she was like, because, you know, she tries to pull on the rubble a little bit and, like, makes some progress, but then there's, like, a cave-in, basically, and so a bunch of more, you know, rubble falls on top of it. And I was like, okay, I could see if you were, like, right then, like, okay, I can't do this right now, I can't do this on my own, like, I gotta change tack, whatever. But, yeah, the fact that then, like, no time in the next 6 years are you, like, well, let me go back, especially because it's like, well, you have Maddie now, so you have another person to help you, and you have, like, you know, you have a stable living situation, so it's not like you have to do everything is prioritized to, like, find food and water and survive. Like, you could be like, okay, well, let's find some freaking, like, especially because, like, she had the rover and, like, couldn't they find some tools? Like,
right, like a pulley system or something?
Exactly. And, like, I feel like she could have come up with something if she had tried.
Right? Like, she's just going to leave them all trapped down there? I don't think so. I think that's a huge plot hole that they're basically ignoring. But whatever. We'll move on.
We can move on. But, yeah, I mean, I like those moments when she's alone, when she goes back to Arcadia and finds Jasper's suicide note that's addressed to Monty. And then when she's like, you know, using her radio to try and contact, you know, Bellamy and Raven and them, and is like, this might be like the last time I'm able to do this. Like, I haven't found any water in a few days. And like, you know, don't feel bad for leaving me. And I love you guys. Like, that was so good. And then, you know, just her like kind of, downward spiral of like not having enough supplies, not having food and water, and getting caught in this like sandstorm that like breaks the rover. And then, like, almost dying in the desert.
Oh, right? With, like, a gun to her head. Like, you win. Okay, I give up. Like, yes. Almost.
Well, and, like, even, like, before that, when she, like, passes out and then wakes up because, like, a scavenging bird is, like, starting to eat her.
Oh, my God. This show can get mighty bleak sometimes.
Yeah. But then she mm-hmm. wakes up again and has a little breakdown. Almost kills herself, but then sees another bird and follows it and discovers this mm-hmm. valley that, for whatever reason, again, I don't know very much about nuclear death waves, managed to survive and is still, you know, still has life in it.
And she promptly shoots the bird.
Yeah, that there. Was great.
How do you feel about her little speech about, like, survival of the fittest? Like, animals don't, you know, aren't. Don't have angst about killing other animals. They just do what they have to survive. She's like, that's all I've ever done. It's like, oh, damn. Like, I don't know about all that.
I mean, like, from an ethical standpoint, maybe. But I think from, like, a narrative standpoint, I actually kind of liked it.
Oh, no, yeah.
You know, because it is like, well, yeah. You know, okay, like, I know I've seen this season before. I know some of the things that are coming. I know I'm not going to be happy about them. But it is true that it's, like, Clark really has, like, spent so much time and had so much guilt and, like, tried to justify, like, the choices that she's made, even though she knows, like, you know, is she always has this kind of, like, war inside her about, like, what is right and what is ethical and then what is just necessary for survival. And, yeah, having this, you know, sort of like realization of herself, or that she maybe had that paradigm shift of like, you know what, fuck that. Like, I'm just an animal and I just need to survive. You know, I think that that's interesting from a character perspective, and definitely we're going to see that continue to influence her decisions. I mean, that and her relationship to Maddie continue to influence her decisions throughout this season.
Which I love that Clark just found a child and was like, you're mine now. But, like, I get it with the whole last people on Earth, right?
Right.
It would be unfortunate if you didn't, you know, take her under your wing or whatever. Yeah. But it's very cute. It's very, you know, Clark big sister-esque.
Yes.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I loved that, like, yeah, you know, she sees Maddie and she's like, mm-hmm. oh, my God, another human being, like, you're alive, mm-hmm. like, you know, and Maddie just, like, runs and hides and is, like, always on the, you know, offensive and, like, gets
with her bear traps and shit.
It's, like, leads Clark into a bear trap, and then when Clark, like, hobbles back to the village and, like, stitches up her own leg and then passes out, then she wakes up and Maddie has stolen her stuff.
Right, it's a girl after Clark's own heart, very pragmatic. Yeah,
but then I love that, like, the way that they signaled, you know, like, the start of their relationship was that Clark made a sketch of her and, like, left it behind. That was so sweet.
Especially because that's, like, so much part of, like, you know, in the next episode, like, the storytelling that Clark does, where she, like, draws pictures of all her friends and Maddie. It's like, they're the heroes. Like, they're almost, like, myths to Maddie. Yeah, like, absolutely. That's so cool.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Are you good on the pre 6-year jump?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think so.
And I was gonna say, I love when the prisoners show up and Maddie has to go hide under the floor.
Yes.
Like, because, like, it's like, you know, call back to Octavia and the fact that, like, Clark is telling her these stories, like, myths, like, you know, Octavia's mom used to tell her and Bellamy. And exactly. It's just like, of course, Maddie, like, idolizes Octavia because she's, like, this great warrior who had to hide to save herself. Like, I think that's so awesome.
Yeah, no, that was great. And, I mean, yeah, I love that scene where, you know, it's like we have the 6-year jump and then it's like, oh yeah, Maddie and Clark are just living happily ever after mm-hmm. in their little paradise. and they're like, they use berries to dye their hair.
Right, which is such a cute so sister cute. Thing to do.
And, you know, and then, like, the around the fire, yeah, like, they're looking through Clark's notebooks where she's drawn the pictures of all her friends. And, again, like, mythologize them, like you said, so that, you know, Maddie has this, like, idealization of them. It's really cool.
Right, and I wonder, like, and I don't know if we talk about this later, because you seem to remember a lot more about the season than I do. It's very fuzzy for me. Okay. I don't remember a lot. So I don't know if this is brought up later, but like, does she share everything with Maddie? Like all of the terrible things? Like, does she know about Finn? Like,
I don't know. I don't remember that. I don't remember that detailed.
Me neither. It's just like, she just seems so starry eyed. It's like, I wonder if Clark whiffed out the worst bits.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah. So basically then the ship lands and, you know, Clark has Maddie, they, like, get all the guns and has Maddie go hide. And, you know, they see these, like, scary-looking people with very large guns come out. And, you know, they start, like, looking around the valley. And a couple of them find Maddie, even in her excellent, you know, under-the-floor hiding place. And so, like, two of them are attacking Maddie. And Clark shows up and, like, just shoots one of them and, you know, saves Maddie. And then she, like, aims her gun at the other guy. And Maddie is like, wait, like, that guy, you know, tried to tell the other guy not to kill me. Like, he tried to help me. I think he's a good guy. And then Clark just says, and this is, I mean, like, just such an incredible shot where it's like, you know, we're looking at Clark, like, from the perspective of, like, you know, her gun in the foreground. And she just goes, like, there are no good guys, and then murders him. Like,
yes, it's excellent. Which this does make me think, like, context clues, right? You have to read into it. But this does make me think that Clark didn't really share the most gnarly bits because Maddie has these ideals and she has these idea of good guys and bad guys. And, you know, if Clark was like 100% honest, then Maddie would be just as, you know, jaded as her, I think. Where like Clark has been able to, I feel like this is my theory, is Clark has been able to shelter her because they've been in this, you know, paradise where they're by themselves and they, you know, dyeing their hair and, you know, picking berries and all this stuff. Like, it's been nice, but now Clark has to go like full mama bear and she has to bring out all her moral gray area stuff, and Maddie's like, whoa, wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, like, it is interesting, you know, from that perspective of like, yeah, if you're Clark and you just meet this new person who knows nothing about you. I mean, like, I guess my guess is she was like 8 or 9, like, you know, at the start of before the time jump. And then, you know, so 6 years later, she's a teenager. Yeah. So it's like, if she really knows nothing about you and you can just tell her like your life with no outside input, like, yeah, how are you going to spin that story? You know, like, are you going to be like, well, and then we couldn't find a way to get, the guy in charge of Mount Weather to stop. So Bellamy and I just killed all those innocent people, you know?
Yep. Like, including a bunch of children. Right. Like, you know, give the poor girl nightmares.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, we don't know that, but it does seem like, yeah, Clark has not had to be, you know, like this pragmatic and this, you know, we just kill to survive before while she and Maddie have been together, but now she does.
Okay, you want to jump up to space?
I think we should jump up to space, yeah.
Meanwhile in space. I love that we both had that same exact thing in our summaries, meanwhile in space.
Yeah. Well, so I guess the first and most important question that I have to ask you is, how do you feel about Bellamy's facial hair?
I don't love it. I mean, it's not the worst. It's not like I'm like, oh, now he's ugly. Like, I still think he's a very attractive man. But, I mean, I prefer him without the facial hair, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with you. It's like, I definitely prefer him clean shaven. And it's like, it's so jarring at the beginning of this season when all of a sudden he has this little like mustache and like goatee almost, and which I get it, it's like time has passed, they've grown mm-hmm. older, whatever, it's been 6 years, but like over the course of these three episodes, like I kind of got used to it and I'm like, okay, like, yeah, he looks fine, but not ideal.
Not ideal. But I do love like that. That's just like a narrative device is like hair, right? Especially mm-hmm. if you make like a big leap because you can't make your actors like it's expensive and time consuming to make your actors look physically older. But if you change everyone's yep. hair, you're like, oh, time has passed. It just feels like one of those funny like human things to me where it's like, oh, like we're just monkeys. Like if you change your hair, it's a different time.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, but it's very, I think they do a great job of showing the change in relationships mm-hmm. that those 6 years in space have done to that group of people. Because, like, arguably, like, the people, like, you know, nobody was really that close to Amori except for Murphy or Echo, right? Nobody was really yeah. that close to Echo. No. Like, Bellamy gave her a chance. But, you know, so it's, like, those two, and they're, you know, grounders. And so they've been, like, accepted and just how comfortable everyone is with each other, where it's yeah. just they've been worn in like an old shoe
yeah.
over these 6 years, and they're like teasing Monty about his algae soup and all of that. So I thought that writing was really good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree that they did a good job of like changing those dynamics and making it feel like, oh yeah, time has passed and these characters have developed their relationship. And then of course, like the sort of it's not surprising that this happened, but like the change in that is that, again, because like, you know, in our last, you know, episodes about the end of last season, we were like, oh, like Murphy and Amori's relationship is like so incredible. It does such great things for Murphy's character. Like, it's so good. And then, of course, we find out that like in the intervening 6 years, they broke up because Murphy's a shithead. And like, not only did they just break up, but now Murphy just lives on his own on the other side of the ship and they just like don't interact.
Right, like it's so funny how not surprising it is to yeah. me, like where when he just came, like when Bellamy brought him his dinner or whatever, and Murphy just attacks him, and I'm just like, of course Murphy went feral, like
yeah. Oh, yeah. Man. You know, yeah, I mean, it feels accurate, like that he wouldn't just be like, oh yeah, now I'll be a, you know, cooperative, like, mm-hmm. you know, contributing member of this crew. Like, no, he would still. So yeah, I mean, he, you know, attacks Bellamy and they kind of spar for a minute and they like, but Bellamy is like giving him, like, I almost want to call it a pep talk, but like a very yeah. aggressive pep talk where he's yeah. like, you know, you don't like being, like, you just self-isolated, like you self-destructed mm-hmm. and self-isolated over here because like you ultimately feel like you're like worthless and like you, you know, ruined your relationship with Amori intentionally so that you didn't ruin it accidentally. Mm-hmm. And now you're over here, but like, you know, you don't need to do this, Murphy. Like, you're not worthless. You're not worthless. Like, say that you're not worthless. And then Murphy's like, hold the fuck up. I see a ship outside.
Wait, plot development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's funny. And like, it's interesting because, like, John and Amori, because she calls him John, but yeah. Murphy and Amori were, like, were so close. And it's, like, when they were finally in a situation where they didn't have to be them against everyone else, Amori yeah. was like, I would love some friends. And Murphy's like, fuck that. Yeah. This is my side of the ship. I would rather be a fuck-up outsider. Thank you very much.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's very much. It's like he's going to make himself an outsider mm-hmm. because
that's
that
like all
is
he
like,
knows.
That's all. That's like that's where he feels most comfortable,
mm-hmm.
even though it's like clearly not good for him. He's yeah. like, you know, like he literally says, I think at one point, like, this is my side of the ship where there's like no rules and no one to disappoint, you know?
Like, yeah. Like, okay, Murphy, how's that chip on your shoulder?
Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, what I think, so then they see the ship and they watch, mm-hmm. they see the ship that's in orbit over Earth and they watch as like a smaller spaceship, you know, leaves from it and goes down. And they're like, okay, well, they must have fuel. Like they're sending people down to the surface. Like, you know, we should go. And there's also like, there's been references to like problems that they're having on, you know, the ring of like sustainability mm-hmm. and like not, you know, their ultimate goal is to get back down to the ground because it seems like they can't really support themselves indefinitely in space. So they're like, okay, well, we're going to go over to this ship in our little transport pod and try to, you know, get some fuel to go down to the surface. And there's just this great moment between Monty and Harper. And again, like such a great sort of inversion of like the end of last season when Harper was like, I mean, it's different because Harper was like, I give up on life. I'd rather just die. And Monty was like, no, we got to live. Come with me. Whereas now mm-hmm. like Harper is like packing up her stuff and she's like, come on, Monty, mm-hmm. we got to go. And he's like, you know, we've been happy and safe up here. Like we haven't had to fight for our lives. We haven't had, you know, all of this terrible things happen. He's like, I killed my mom. Like I, you know, watched yeah. Jasper die. Like, mm-hmm. he's like, I don't want to go back to the ground and experience those things and like have to be that person again.
Mm-hmm. It's just so sad because you just know he's right. You're like, as soon as you interact with other people, like the shit's going to hit the fan.
Yeah. That they're just like walking into a powder keg down there.
Ugh. Or Monty, he just wants to be a good person so bad.
No.
He just wants his, you know, farm his algae.
He really does. He's too good.
Oh, too good for this world.
And then one more thing happens on the spaceship.
And then we find out that Bellamy and Echo are together. Because of course. So.
And like, okay, yeah. Well, I think we should talk about this now because literally it is not relevant at all to the following two episodes. Mm-hmm. That like, it's like, okay, because here's the thing about Bellamy is that whenever he gets, it's like when Clark gets a relationship, you know, like with Finn mm. or with Lexa, you know, it's like we see that relationship mm. develop over time. We see those characters, like, you know, why they fall in love with each other. We get excited about it. And with Bellamy, when he gets in a relationship, it's because it's the start of a new season and they give him a random girl that he has apparently been with for a while that we don't like care about. We haven't seen the relationship and there's just like no like intimacy or buildup. And like, again, I don't remember all the details of this season, but I do remember having the like impression that it's like the fact that Bellamy and Echo are dating does not come up very often. Like it's not that like plot important. It's just there mm-hmm. as an obstacle to Bellamy and Clark, and it's yeah. dumb and I hate it.
Because if Clark isn't with anyone and Bellamy's not with anyone, then there's really no excuse to not have them fall in love.
And it's like, and I would be less mad about it if, like, I'm not entirely opposed to the concept of Bellamy being in a relationship or falling in love with someone else, mm-mm. but it's like, do the freaking work. Don't just be like, yeah. here's a character, they're dating. Like,
yeah, he's never had a relationship that we watched blossom on screen. Yeah, that's exactly. a very good point. I haven't ever thought about that, but you're 100% right. Do you think that was that they thought that that was the only way to make Echo likable?
I mean, I don't honestly, like, I don't know that Echo has to be likable, you know? Mm. Like, because even now, because I feel like that could have been done just by, like you were saying, like the dynamics that are established mm. of like these characters who have been in space together for 6 years are comfortable with each other. And like you see, like, yeah, Echo has been pitching in, like Echo's doing her part. She's learned new skills. She's learned how to like be, you know, a part of this type of community through necessity. And like, yeah, they're comfortable with each other. But it's also, you know, like in these episodes, she's also always like thinking as a spy and a warrior, you know, like yeah. when later on when they're like, should we kill all of these people in cryosleep? She's like, yes, strategically, that's the best thing to do, you know, like.
So, yeah, that's really good. Yeah. Point. And like, we like Amori now, and she broke up oh, with yeah. Murphy.
I mean, like, I still liked Amori before, but I think I like her yeah, better now.
Because... Yeah, she was just like, the less cutthroat, the less cutthroat she is, the better.
Yeah, or just like, again, like, we're seeing her trying to do new things and be a part of this community and like, yeah. help out.
Oh, also, just the moment where Raven and Murphy are talking, and Murphy's talking about his woes or whatever, and Raven's like, she's like, this is a cockroach playing a tiny violin.
Yeah.
Cracked me up. That was excellent joke. Excellent writing.
All right. Well, do you have anything else about this one?
Just that it would suck to be Raven, to be, I guess, a seventh wheel, because everyone else is all shacked up, except I guess now Amori and Murphy. No, but like Amori, for a while, she was the only person without somebody.
Well, like maybe Amori and Murphy broke up before Echo and Bellamy got together, you know?
Maybe. So well, I mean, I think Raven said something about 6 months, where they've been broken up for 6 months.
Oh, okay. Then, yeah, you're right.
And then, yeah, Echo and Bellamy got together like 3 years into it, so.
Right.
So she's been dealing with this for a while. Yeah. Just, I feel for her.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then at the end of the episode, we get a little shot of what's going on in the bunker, which is,
Which that cut is so good. We're so we just talked about the relationship, but Echo and Bellamy are talking about, you know, the situation on the ground, and Bellamy's worried about Octavia, and, you know, Echo's like, you know, Octavia's a survivor. She'll have gotten them through this. Like, she'll be fine. But she was like, I'm worried she will banish me because I was technically banished. I tried to kill her and all these things. And Bellamy's like, no, she'll understand. And I think, is it him or is it Octavia or Echo? One of them says, Octavia is the least of our worries. And then it cuts to Octavia as like the blood queen watching people kill each other in the ring. And it's like, oh shit. Like that cut is excellent.
Yeah, exactly. So then the second episode, the Red Queen, we get to kind of see what has been happening in the bunker for the past 6 years.
Oh, which basically none of it's good. All of it's terrible. What do they even open with? I can't remember.
I mean, they just basically in like the early, you know, starts out like similarly, like about a month after Prime Gaia. And Octavia is just like, she has to go to council meetings and like give decisions, and she's just like not into it. She's just not into leadership. And then also we see that like Cain and Abby are fighting because Abby's like, you should have let me die. Cain is like, sorry, I didn't. I don't regret it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the setup. And then they hear, you know, movement from above, which is Clark, and Abby's like, it's gotta be Clark. So they try to open the door, and that's when they realize like they can't open the door. It's blocked by rubble. So then like people are upset about this that they can't escape. And then that's when like this Kara character comes in, and she's like, well, also like so I also don't know very much about hydroponic farming, but for whatever reason, she's like, you know, the bunker won't support us for more than 5 years. And then they like sent her out, and Jaha says something about like, she's done the math. Like she, you know, she knows we might have to like do population reduction again. And Octavia's like, there's not a chance.
Yeah. Never doing that again.
Yeah.
And then, this one is fuzzy to me for some reason.
It's kind of a lot of weird.
It's like a lot of weird plot moves in order to get to
basically what happens is that, well, and like also, you know, Jaha and this Kara character and other people are, well, maybe not Jaha so much, but lots of Sky Crew are like, we never should open the door and let all these grounders in.
Yeah.
So then, you know, while Sky Crew is like in the cafeteria eating, they like knock out, or actually I think they kill the guards and shut the doors. And they're like, okay, now we have the food and we're just gonna stay here and let everyone outside starve, and then we'll survive for a lot longer.
Which like is a peak Sky people crew. Like Sky Crew move. Like, like I just love all of the I don't even know what to call it. Like, I guess the colonizer mentality is what I'm going to call it, of Sky Crew, where it just feels like they feel entitled to everything on the Earth and that they're just going to take it no matter what, you know, no matter who needs to get genocided. It's just like, it's just a very great commentary on that kind of thinking. It just blows my mind every time. But so is this where we get the first inkling? So, you know, they lock up Abby and Kane because they know that they're going to try to stop them. Right. And when they're locked up, Abby and Kane kind of fight about. Abby's like, you should have let me die. Mm-hmm. You should have dragged my unconscious body out of this bunker and let me die. And Kane is like, obviously, I was never going to do that. And I feel like this is maybe where we get the first inkling of, like, Abby's addiction.
Yeah, so actually, before the whole, like, Arnth takeover, when they were just eating in the cafeteria, Jackson and Abby were sitting together, and Abby, like, takes a couple of pills, and Jackson says, like, oh, like, I heard you were still having migraines. Wasn't that supposed to stop after, like, your little ice bath? Which was a question I had at the end of last season of, like, hey, doesn't Abby still have brain damage from the EMP shock? So I guess however they could do it, they managed to replicate Raven's, like, reboot your brain by dying for a minute thing on Abby. So they fixed that. But yeah, then when she and Kane are locked up and, like, Jackson comes to bring them food, she's like, hey, also bring me my pills, please. I need them.
Yes. And you're like, oh, maybe this is it was a little bit more than actual just pain management.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate. And just what shape she's in from withdrawal, I guess, where she is not doing well at the end of
that. Yeah, she's like all sweaty.
Imprisonment,
and...
yeah.
Yeah.
Which Kane is like, not, I mean, he's concerned for her, but he doesn't. I feel like he doesn't connect the dots.
Really. Yeah, he doesn't pick up on that. But anyway, so then also in that, while they're locked up and they're talking to Kara, and Kara's basically, or they're kind of like, why did you lock us up? And she's like, well, because I know you'll try and stop us, but I don't want to kill you because, like, I don't kill my own people, unlike you guys.
Right. Because her tragic backstory to him is that her husband and father were part of the culling. They got booted out of the bunker.
Right. Or I think, like, one of them, like, was part of the culling on the Ark, and then the other one, like, didn't make the cut on the bunker. But anyway, she's lost people.
Some bad luck.
But then, in that moment, then Abby is like, you know, well, hey, first of all, not all of the Sky Crew were in. Like, Jaha, notably, was not in the cafeteria. There's some others, too. You know, and so she's like, so there will be Sky Crew people who die. And then she's like, describing the process of starvation, you know, to, like, try and elicit some sympathy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and at one point is like, and the first to die will be lucky because they won't be tempted to eat their friends. And she also, like, mentions, she calls it the blight on the Ark, like, as something that happened in the past. So, like, maybe there was cannibalism or the thought of cannibalism at some point on the Ark while it was up there, but, like, that's not, I don't know if that ever gets mentioned again. But yeah, so that's a little Chekhov's cannibalism that we have mentioned in this
episode. Chekhov's cannibalism, that's a good one. Yes, or it's foreshadowing for sure. And so, but the fact that Jaha's not in the the mess hall, the kitchen, the cafeteria, means that Octavia goes to him. Octavia and
Indra,
her right hand lady, Indra. Thank you. Octavia and Indra go to Jaha, and they're like, "Hey, how do we get into this cafeteria, Mr. Engineer Man? Tell us how to do it." And basically, isn't he basically like, "You can't"?
Well, I mean, at first he's like, you can't. And then he's like, well, we can, but I have to get to this specific generator. And basically it's like, mm-hmm. since the doors to the mess hall got locked, it's just chaos everywhere.
Yeah,
like everyone is fighting for themselves. So basically it's like to get to the place where Jaha can like reroute some electricity to, you know, open the door, whatever bullshit. Like they have to navigate this, you know, area of the bunker where it's just like chaos and fighting.
Right. And so they're like, they basically recruit him. But I think he's like, he doesn't go that unwillingly because he's like, I don't want to die either. And I got this kid I got to take care of. So they make their way to the generator. He was like, can you make him like look like a grounder to Nyla? And she's like, absolutely, I can. I'm the best. She's got hidden talents that are helpful now. So they make Jaha look like a grounder. They're on their way to get him to the generator, and they're attacked by a random group of angry grounders. Jaha is hit somewhere. He got some sort of, I think, knife to the stomach or something. So he's slowly bleeding out. So he and Octavia kind of hobble their way to the generator, and he has to instruct her on what to do because he's kind of down for the count. So they're doing their thing. And then it gets to a point where Jaha, what does he refuse? He refuses to do the last thing until Octavia.
Basically, like at the last minute, he refuses to like do the last thing to open the door, and he says like, unless you, he's like, right now, it's a bunch of bloodthirsty grounders like outside that mess hall door. If it just opens, they're gonna go in and kill everyone. You need to make sure that, you know, the people who were innocent, like the Sky Crew people who didn't know that this was happening or didn't help to have this happen, will be protected, and that only the guilty will be punished.
Right. So she's like, fine. She goes, and this is like her big moment,
well,
right?
Just right before that, because another thing he said in that little talk was like, he says, on the Ark, we made death the enemy. Mm. Like, that was how we, you know, like, because she says something about, like, I'm not a leader, I'm a warrior. And he's like, well, if you're a warrior, you need an enemy. We made death the enemy. And anyone who did anything that pushed us closer to death, you know, they were punished. So that's kind of like the advice.
He's basically like, I don't apologize for killing your mother because she pushed us closer to death by having you. So, you know, some tough truths. So with that in mind, Octavia goes to face the grounders who are kind of parked outside of the door, trying to open it, trying to get in and kill everyone inside. And she is like, hey, we're one crew now, right? She was like, there are innocent people in there. We're not going to kill them. We're just going to capture the people responsible. And they're like, that's some bullshit. And they go to attack her. And she's like, and that's where she does the, you are one crew or you are the enemy of one crew. And she just, and she says, decide. And no, choose. Is
choose,
it choose?
Yeah.
Choose. And people come up and face her, and she just cuts them down. And then she does it again. You are one crew, or you are the enemy of one crew. Choose. And they go after her, and like, it's just like three, I think it's four rounds of that.
Yeah,
and she ends up killing like at least a dozen people.
Yeah.
And then like the final time she does it, she's like covered in blood, and like, you know, she's I think at the last one she took on like four or five people at once. So everyone's terrified of her, and they're like, okay, we're one crew. You win. You have earned your leader stripes. We're gonna follow you now. And so she goes back to Jaha, who is basically almost dead. And he does what he needs to do. And dies finally.
there's a little bit of time between those things, but he finally dies. And when the doors open, the grounders go in, and they only capture the guilty people. And so then basically they're all brought into the rotunda, right, into this little ring. And then, you know, Octavia walks out, and she's all outfitted, you know, covered in blood, and she's like, she it's so funny because, so like earlier, like at the very beginning of this episode, Nyla gave her a book and was like, oh hey, I found this book, and I know Bellamy used to like read you those like ancient Roman stories, so like I thought you'd like it. And she opens it, and I think it's supposed to be like Ovid or something. I'm not sure exactly. But anyway, so then Octavia comes out, and she's like, okay, well, these people, you know, committed crimes against Wankru, and the punishment for that is death. And then she's like, but, you know, in ancient Rome, criminals, accused people could fight for their freedom. And so, like, I'm going to give you all the same chance. And she, like, takes out her sword and throws it down in the middle of these, like, probably like 8 people, maybe, who are down there. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, the last one standing is like, gets to live and, you know, is sort of not, you know, has their record clean of this crime. And, so then Kara, the farm runner, picks up the sword and they start to battle.
Right? And like, it does seem a little out of nowhere, right? It's like, yeah. It's like, okay, how did she come to this decision? But, and I think they could have done a better job of this, but like, you can see where her reasoning is like, you know, on the arc, people were angry because you were just sentenced to die and there was nothing you could do about it, right? Like, people felt helpless. So maybe like, this is her answer to making people feel less helpless is like, well, you know, at least you have a shot, you know, if you're survival of the fittest, right? Only the strong survive, you know, all that good stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess you can kind of think about what kind of culture is fostered if this is your justice system, right? Like,
oh, yeah,
it means that, like, people are going to practice their fighting, right? They're going to try and be good fighters because, hey, maybe one day you're going to do something wrong and you're going to be thrown in the ring and it's just going to be, you know, you. But then also, you know, so then after this, we jump forward 6 years and, you know, to the present day. And we see that, you know, that it is like a gladiator fight and that people are like, the audience is watching and cheering. It has become this like sport, you know, to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. So.
Which is like, yeah, how much entertainment do you really have down there? Forever, right? They're trapped forever. Like, that's their mentalities. We're here forever.
Right. So it also, like, it's population control because you're getting rid of people, but then also people have a chance to redeem themselves. But yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. It's rough.
And they call Octavia Blood Reina.
Blood Reina, which is so good. Yeah. All the, like, badass names, like Juan Heda, you know, Blood Reina, so good.
Yeah, it's very good. My only other, like, note of worth for this episode is that, like, when Cain and Abby are talking about, you know, she's like, you should have, you know, let me die or whatever. And he says, like, no, I did the right thing. You're a doctor. I would have made the same call even if I didn't love you. And it's just like, y'all gotta train more fucking doctors.
Oh my god, right? It's just you, like, and Jackson, that's it?
It's literally just Abby and Jackson. And like, I guess Clark is, you know, kind of an honorary doctor. She's pretty good with medical stuff. But it's just like, that should be, once you guys are settled in this bunker, that should be your number one priority, is teaching medical knowledge to more people.
Right? Like, goddamn. But then we wouldn't have that plot device, Jenna.
Yeah, true.
All right, we'll move on to the last episode.
Sounds good.
All right. In this one, I love how, like, you know, because in the, I feel like it was the first episode of the season, Clark kind of mentions, you know, what does the commander of death do when there's no one left to kill?
Yeah.
And, you know, so she's been peaceful. But then as soon as these people show up, she goes like full Rambo, where it's like she has all these death traps and she's got her sniper rifle out. Like, she, you know, you would think after all this time, she'd be a little rusty. Maybe she'd be a little hesitant to kill people. But no, she's right back in the thick of it. She's efficient and terrifying. And that trap where the guy just gets like impaled by that thing, and you know, Maddie's like, well, you know, if we have to kill them, like, you know, put him out of his misery. And Clark goes, not yet, because she knows the others will come for him.
Yeah, him to lure in more people.
Just so metal, just no mercy. And like, who could blame her? Like, she's done this so many times. Like, she knows how this goes.
Yeah.
Oh, which I also wanted to mention, like, on the just parallels, right? Where it's they're the grounders now, and these are prisoners. Where they the 100 were prisoners from
damn,
space.
You're so right.
Like it's kind of like just like inverted. It's interesting.
Yeah. No, that's so true. So yeah, that she manages to kill a couple of people like that, but then they get blasted by this like huge, like sound wave gun thing, and so then they run, and some of the prisoners, inmates, whatever, Allegius people follow them. And then also, like, when we're... So basically, we have, like, three characters that have been introduced from this Allegius ship, and it's the leader, who is Dioza, and the pilot, Shaw, and then, like, I guess Dioza's kind of secondhand man, McCreary. And McCreary is clearly like, he loves to hurt people. That's kind of his whole thing. Whereas Shaw is clearly like, doesn't want to hurt people unnecessarily, which like later in this episode, we find out more about that or kind of why he is different from everyone else in his group because of this. And then also like when they're talking, they make mentions of like the army and like the Navy SEALs and stuff. So we're kind of like, getting some context for who these people are, but yeah.
Yeah, and they, like, continually make mention, like, Shaw isn't one of us, like, so they don't trust him and all that stuff, so. Interesting dynamics going on, but we don't get too into it in this episode yet.
Yeah.
But hints of what is to come. So yeah, so Clark, when they get hit with the thing, Clark is like, okay, hide in this hole. with a gun and do your best to stay alive. I'm gonna like keep, you know, I'm gonna keep them away from you, all this good stuff. But then they catch up to Clark, they capture her, and she basically just plays dumb. Like she is acts like she doesn't understand English.
Yeah,
so that she
doesn't speak. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so like, but they're kinda onto her. They're like, oh, she's just pretending she doesn't understand English, which I'm like, how do you know? She could be French or something. You don't know. But you know, cause she was like, every time she looks at the radio when we're talking, she's tracking our movements. She's trying to see, you know, where we are. And you know, they're kind of playing good cop, bad cop. Dioza's bad cop. Shaw is good cop, but it's like, he's kind of reluctant. He doesn't want to do this, right? He's like actual real good cop. It's not an act. So like when they're alone, he talks to her about like, the before times.
Like he mentions Detroit. So it's like,
yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, wait, oh shit, like, you're old.
Yeah.
Right. He mentions like 100 years ago or something. So it's like, oh, okay, you're from the before times. And you've been up in space. And that's when I think they hear over the radio that they found Maddie. And Clark is like, okay, I'll, like, tell you anything that you want. Just don't hurt her. Oh, and she bargains also. She is, like, she's leading them into a trap. Like, if you don't listen to me, they're all going to die. And so Dioza is like, okay, stop. And, like, look around you for traps. And like, oh, yeah, I almost walked into a bear trap or whatever. Yeah. And so they're like, okay, we can kind of trust Clark. So she starts her whole thing. And I think Dioza's like, tell us how the world ended or something. And Clark is like, which yep. And I'm like, oh, yeah, yikes. And so they just kind of cut away because, you know, we know the whole story. So, but then, well, I guess now we have to go to,
we're talking about what's happening space. In space. Yeah. So basically, so our friends in space, head over to the Allegius ship, which they're like, it must be empty because they took that transport ship down. And like, as they're approaching, you know, they don't get radioed. They don't get shot at. So they're like, okay, it must be empty. And Maury is like piloting the ship to like dock them, but she fucks it up. And so Raven like takes over and, you know, fixes it. But it's kind of rough. And Maury then clearly just feels terrible. And Murphy is like making little jokes about
God, being a complete shit about
just
it.
Just being a complete asshole, yeah. So then everyone else kind of like wanders around and they see like a sign that says like no inmates past this point. And so then Monty is like, oh yeah, well like these mining missions, like extraterrestrial mining missions are really dangerous. So they, you know, used prison labor. They sent the people who they thought were disposable. And Murphy goes, sounds familiar.
Yeah. And so, and they're basically like, you know, should we be very worried about this? And like, oh, they're the descendants of prisoners. Like, they're survivors. They're like us.
Yeah.
Where it's like, probably not. But so then they get into the captain's quarters, and they can see that like the doors have been forced open. Like, there's this big rent in the doors, and they're like, well, that's not good. And they get on to the board, and Raven finds that they do have hydrazine. And so they're like, cool, we'll go get that. We'll get the hydrazine, and we'll get into our pod, and we'll go. But as they are rolling the hydrazine back to the cockpit, they find 300, just about 300 prisoners in cryo sleep. And they're like looking at these people, and they're like, obviously, they're like rough looking. They're like, these are the original prisoners.
Yes. And so then I think it cuts, like, maybe not right away, but like, then we see that like Bellamy and Raven are still on the bridge, right? Mm-hmm. And Bellamy is like looking through the personnel files, and he's just like, murderer, 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 like arsonist.
Murder by arson. Murder. Yeah. Armed robbery that led to murder.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, these are not, you know, these were not white collar criminals.
No. And they go through the captain's log, and they're like, oh, the last entry was like a long time ago. They're like, oh gosh. And they open it up, and they see a video of Dioza and McCreary and Shaw coming through and killing the captain. And
And the captain is saying, like, basically, there's been a mutiny. You know, like, the prisoners are taken over, and then they kill him.
Yep. And I don't know why it has to be like, oh, this happened here, where they're like, there's a mug. It's, I don't know. Anyway, that's not important.
I mean, it's kind of relevant later, but.
Yeah, well, you know, they see a mug in the background, and the mug is in the exact same place. They're like, this is the last thing that happened here.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're attacked by this this very large man who, again, like, there was a mention down on the ground where, like, one of the other people was like, oh, Dioza, there was, like, an alarm tripped, like, on the ship, and she's like, we'll just do the, like, security protocols, which is to Kodiak, wake up this scary
guy. Which is such a cool code name, Kodiak.
Kodiak. And so he wakes up from cryo and just goes into the fridge and starts beating the hell out of Bellamy and Raven.
Mm-hmm. It takes both of them to finally kill him, and then the others come in.
And Echo, like, right? Echo shows up too, doesn't she?
Yeah. So they all show up, and they're like, hey, there are, like, 299 more of him, and they're like, it took us three of us to kill this one guy. Like, you know, this is a problem. So they go check it out, and it's an interesting conversation, right? Because they have to decide, are we just going to kill all these people in their sleep, or are we going to leave them be? Like, they're obviously going to be a problem. The, you know, they go back and forth a little bit, and Murphy's like, if Clark was here, this wouldn't even be a conversation.
kill these people. That was what was so interesting is, like, so, you know, first off, Echo is the one who was like, we need to just kill all these people. Like, that's the strategic thing to do. And then she literally, like, says to Bellamy, like, I know that you don't like this or whatever. Like, I know how you feel, but, like, this is, you know, this is the right thing to do for us. And then, yeah, Murphy is, like, on her side. You know, he's like, yeah, like, we have the opportunity here to just effortlessly, like, get rid of this threat. We should do it. But, like, Bellamy and Raven are kind of like, I don't know how we feel about it. Like, just killing 300 people like that. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like, Murphy is like, if Clark was here, this wouldn't even be a conversation. Like, we would just do it. And then they have this sort of argument over, like, what would Clark want, you know? Mm. Like, which is...
like, she died for us to live.
Exactly.
We're supposed to throw our lives away for these 300 prisoners, murderers.
Yeah, or, like, she sacrificed herself for us, so we need to be, like... better people, you know, like, what kind of future do we want to imagine? Like, it's, and it's like, it's so good that that's this, like, formative, you know, that they still care so much about Clark and think so much about Clark and, like, have her as this sort of, like, benchmark for, like, leadership.
So good.
Yeah.
Princess.
But basically,
Then they go and they intercept these transmissions with the radios on the ground, and they figure out that they're hunting, you know, what is essentially grounders. And they're like, these are probably people we know.
Yeah.
And they think the bunker's open, right? They think the bunker's open. Everyone's, you know, so they think that they're attacking their people. And so they're like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to use these 300 people as leverage. Like, if they don't you know, if they don't stop attacking our people, then we will kill these 300 people. Right. Like, this is how we're going to get them to, you know, stand down. And Bellamy's basically like, can you kill them remotely? is what he asks Raven. She's like, well, I can try to figure it out. And so after she tries to figure it out, she's like, not really. One of us has to be up here to pull the trigger, basically. And she was like, it's very technical. Like, I have to be the one to do it.
Yeah.
And Bellamy's like, I'm not leaving you up here. Like, we're not leaving anyone again. Like,
after yeah, like he says, I left Clark behind to die. I'm not going to do that again.
And of course, Raven, being who she is, she lies and says that there's an escape pod, which that lie is so obvious, which I'm like, Bellamy, come on.
I mean, right. So it's like, verify. You know, she says like, you know, it's very technical. Like, I have to be the one to do it. And then she says like, and hey, you know, if it works, like, we'll all be buddy buddy and they can come back up here and bring me down. Like, no big deal. And Bellamy's still just like, no, we'll figure something else out. And so then she just, and again, it's like, we don't know that this is a lie. Like, empirically, but yeah, like from the, you know, the her way that she says language. It, the body language, the series of events that has happened, she goes like, well, there's also an escape pod for the captain and first mate. So like, even if it doesn't work, I'll come down. And he's like, okay, fine. Like, you know, but I promise we'll work this out. You know, we'll get you back.
Right. And so they said that, and Bellamy goes, or they both go back, and Bellamy explains the situation.
Raven doesn't go back. Raven
stays. Oh, right. That's important. Bellamy goes back, explains the situation, and Murphy, and Maury says, like, why does it have to be Raven? Can't John do it?
Yeah.
And that is so mean. It's so awful. It's like, so Murphy's like, well, fuck all of you. He was like, well, I'll just stay here with Raven, since obviously you guys don't want me around.
I mean, and- but it's also, I mean, like, I do think that there's a certain level of selflessness in it, you know? Like, he jokes as he's leaving. He's like, well, with Amori at the controls, like, this is the survivor's choice, you know? Like, she's gonna fuck up, you know, piloting the pod down and you guys are all gonna die. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it does seem like there is some genuine feeling there of, like, that he doesn't want Raven to just be alone up here.
Yeah, and it to me, it felt like, you know, from that, the first episode where, like, it seemed like they had, like, a camaraderie between them. Like, ever since they forgave each other for the horrible things they've done to each other in the past, like, they've had an understanding. And so I think you're right that he didn't actually want to leave Raven alone. But then he immediately regrets it because Raven is, like, laughing at him. She's like, that was a lie. We're stuck up here.
Just a truly incredible scene. Yeah, where he comes in and he's like, you know, hey, I'm going to keep you company. And he's like, you know, she's like, well, you're an idiot. He's like, well, like, yeah, if it weren't for the escape pod. And she's like, no, you idiot. Like, I lied about the escape pod. Like, you're fucking stuck up here with me. And just his realization was just like, just comedic gold. It was just incredible.
Yeah. And she's like, thanks, you're right. It would have sucked to die up here.
Yeah.
So then we get back on the ground. They, you know, they make it safely to the ground. Yes, they get out and
she doesn't kill them.
Amori does it. We're very proud of her. And they get out of the capsule and they're basically immediately surrounded by these prisoners.
Right, which again, like, you know, Echo with her, like, you know, spy mentality. She knows that. Yeah. Like, as soon as they land, she's like, people will have seen this happen. Like, we gotta go hide. Like, let's get out of here right away. But they're not fast enough.
Yeah. So, like, oh shit. And then so they radio to Dioza and they're like, hey, there are more people. Like, she lied to you, because Clark was like, it's just me and Maddie. Like, that's the only people that are here. She's like, she lied. And so Dioza, like, puts a shock collar around Clark's throat and, like, pushes her out into the village. And she's shocking her, like, over and over again.
She says to McCreary, she's like, you can do whatever you want to Clark. Like, you can have some fun with your little shock collar, your little taser collar.
And so, she's being shocked over and over again. Shaw's like, stop. Like, I think she was telling the truth, because she's like, I swear there are no more people. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know who these people are. And then Maddie comes out of the shadows and saves Bellamy's space friends and by killing everyone. And she's like, because she knows who they are, she knows immediately. She goes, you're Bellamy. Come with, like, me. Clark's in trouble.
Well, yeah, like Maddie comes out of the shadows, right, and just, like, has a spear and, like, kills one of the guys right away. And then they, like, you know, manage to get rid of all of these of Dioza's men. And, like, the Bellamy and the space crew are like, what the fuck? Like, who is this child? Like, what is happening? You know, and so they're also kind of, like, like, are we safe? Like, are we good? And then Maddie turns and looks at them and she goes like, Bellamy? And Bellamy again is like, what the fuck? And she goes, Clark knew you would come. And then we see Bellamy's face as he goes, Clark's alive and realizes it.
Ah. Oh, so good. So, of course, they get in the rover and they pull up. And Clark is, like, confused because there's a grown person walks out. And she's like, what the F is going on? And then he walks into the light and it's Bellamy and her face. And it's just so much. And Bellamy's, you know, lays it out where he's like, you know, let her go. We have people on your ship and they're going to kill him. And if you don't, stand down. And he shows the mug to prove that he's been up in the ship.
He's been on the ship.
And that's where it ends, the cliffhanger. Well,
yeah, so he, like, he says, like, we have, you know, he makes this threat of, like, we can kill all of your people. And he said, like, 283, like, people are still on that ship. And so then, like, you know, Dio's is kind of like, okay, people, like, stand down. And then she goes, 283 lives for one. She must be pretty important to you. And Bellamy just says, like, looks at Clark lying on the ground and just says, she is.
Oh, God. It's so much.
It's so much. God. And it's just like, it's just unfathomable to me that the creators of the show have managed to write, like, the most, like, intimate and incredible, like, deep relationship, but they don't want to cash in on it. You know, like, that's what fucking boggles the mind of, it's like, what, like, you have done the fucking work. Like, you've accomplished something that so many, you know, TV shows don't do well, right? Like, there's so many things where it's just like, oh yeah, they're the two main characters, they'll get together, you know, and it's not done well, whatever. But it's like, you have accomplished that. So, like, why do you keep putting meaningless obstacles in your own way? It's just so dumb.
Yeah, I don't know. And, like, I guess I can see the argument for, like, you know, men and women can be friends or whatever.
Yes.
And, like, it can be a deep, meaningful friendship. And I totally agree. But also, I love romance. I love them to kiss.
Yes. Bellamy and Raven can have a great, deep friendship, okay?
Yes, like, exactly. We already got that.
With other characters on the show. That's not what we need for them, though.
That's fine. Whatever. At least it's better than them doing it and doing it badly. I'd rather have the pining and the unfulfilled relationship than have a shitty one. So,
yeah, I guess that's true. But
be thankful for what we have and not what we don't.
Anything else you have to say about these episodes?
Let me check my notes. Nope, that's it.
Okay, yeah, I think we got to everything that I had too. So, it's nice to have them all together. I think what's really, like, interesting and what is gonna be really relevant going forward is, like, I don't know what the timeline was, you know, before the time jump. Like, we had four seasons and each of those seasons, were less than a year, you know? But, you know, so it is, like, it is really interesting that they chose to do this time jump so that, like, the things that have happened over the past 6 years, right? Like, the space crew being together, the bunker people being together, Maddie and Clark being together, like, has had a, you know, has been a longer lasting occurrence than anything that happened before. Yeah, I just think that that's, like, that's really interesting that, like, you know, and we'll see it. Like, we'll see Clark and Maddie's, you know, relationship and stuff. And we'll see the depth there. But it's just like, yeah, that Clark now has this character who she has this connection to that basically is going to supersede everything else. Because she's been sort of a mother to this girl for 6 years now, you know? And, like, same thing with the stuff that's been, you know, in the other locations.
Yeah, and just how how it kind of shook up the bonds and the allegiances and everything.
Absolutely.
Where it was, like, kind of pretty black and white before. It's really interesting. Yeah, no, you're right. I'm looking forward to remembering as I watch things that happen.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to A Bit Much.
We'd like to thank Bree Mimba and Meredith Stein for our lovely logo.
You can find us on the internet at A Bit Much Podcast or abitmuchpodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you next time. In the meantime, I will continue to be Jenna.
I will always be Megan. And just sorry to disappoint, but sorry, lovebirds, no zero-G SpaceX. Wah, wah. Which I think logistically would be very difficult. Zero-G. Like, friction's an important part of that situation.
Well, yeah, and also just like, I mean, just movement. It would just be an entirely different, anyway. I'm gonna stop recording now.
Me too.